Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Richard Osborne and the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. Hi everyone, this is Richard Osborne. Welcome to the second episode of the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. In this episode, I want to talk about teaching grammar. I think this is a really important point for expert language trainers. How do we teach grammar in our training? What way should we teach grammar or not? How far should we go? What sort of knowledge do we need to have? So I'm hoping to give some tips from my experience and some advice that can maybe help you to teach grammar a bit better in your training. The reason that I'm doing this podcast today is I was with a colleague of mine today who's applying to do the CELTA training, which you may or may not know about. The CELTA is the Cambridge certificate that you can get, the 4-week intensive course that you can do specifically about language training. It's one of the only, apart from TESOL in Dublin, in Trinity College, it's one of the only proper, so to speak, trainings that you can actually do. I talked about this in my article, that there are not really many training courses that are available in the world for English language trainers. It's still something that's very much kind of self-studied in the world. And most people who are really good at language training, most people who, you know, I could call expert language trainers, are people who've built themselves up to do that. Like I did the CELTA, and I also did the one above that. It's called DELTA, which is also by Cambridge ESOL. And I think those training courses gave me a really, really good base to go on. They gave me a really good start of like the basic knowledge, a reading list to get my teeth into of things I needed to read to discover more about language training. But they are not the be all and end all in any way. Doing the CELTA and the DELTA is not going to make you an expert language trainer. You use the knowledge that you get there and the advice that you get there to go on and to experiment in your classes and to develop yourself professionally. And it's not like they're not making it, they're not lying, they're not selling you a false promise in Cambridge. They absolutely tell you that you need to focus on continuous professional development. That's a theme in both the CELTA and the DELTA. You need to keep developing yourself, keep reading the industry materials and blog posts and going to conferences and taking further training courses and whatever. So they're not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes about what this will actually achieve for you. So you do these courses, I really recommend them, CELTA and DELTA, great. And I've got a colleague who's applying for the CELTA. So she's been a teacher for a long time, and she has never really explicitly studied grammar, English grammar, as most teachers who get started haven't. You're just getting used to the idea that you're going to have to explain why I have been and I have gone is not the same. That's something that we all have to go through, is learning these, learning to be a little bit of a professional grammar studying person, whatever that's called. I'm sure there's a whole branch of people in university somewhere who just study grammar, that's for sure. But we need to have the basics from that to be able to transfer some of that knowledge to the learners. And that's really probably what the theme of this podcast is going to be. At what point should you stop yourself from transferring certain knowledge to learners that might actually do more damage than good in terms of the detail that you can go into? If you look at people who actually study grammar seriously, like I said, in universities, as a proper profession, you get to a point where it's just too complicated, it's too precise. You're looking at language in such a minute way, it's just, you would never need to go that far. As a teacher, I don't think, you can go quite far as a teacher just so that you're an expert. You make sure that you're an expert in front of a learner, but for the learner, they're never going to need to even scratch the surface of what proper grammar study is about, the field of grammar study. So there was a question in this CELTA application form that this colleague of mine was showing me, saying, okay, look at these different sentences. Is there a mistake? How would you categorize the grammar point? And what's the description of this grammar point? So, there was an example like, Jane is getting up at 6:30 every day. So your instinct as a beginning language trainer is to look at that and say, oh, well, no, that's not, every day. You can't say every day with the present progressive or present continuous. You should really use present simple. And I guess with learners as well, that's something that you could tell them as well. You could tell them, yeah, this is the rule. If there's an adverb in there or an adverbial that says something about frequency, so every day or sometimes or whatever, then that's something that you should always use with present simple as opposed to present continuous if you're looking at describing something in the present. And so that, that's fine, and you can, I'm sure with the CELTA they would accept that. Describe how the present simple is always used with frequency adverbs, or is often used with frequency adverbs. And my question was, okay, but can you think of a scenario where Lucy or whatever gets up every day at 6:30, Lucy is getting up every day at 6:30, would actually be valid? So she, as usual with a language trainer, you're like, no, it's definitely present simple, because you start off thinking in black and white. I've got to tell the learner how it is. I know how grammar books are. I've seen grammar books. I've seen the rules in the grammar books. They're quite explicit. There's especially the nice grammar books that you buy in the shops are short and well explained and quite simplistic and concise. And they say, okay, if it's present simple, it's like this. If it's present continuous, it's like this. So I should be transferring that to the learners. Fine. And there's a logic to that. The learner doesn't need to know the exceptions, but I was saying, well, okay, try to think of any scenario where this Lucy's getting up every day at 6:30 would actually exist. And she couldn't think of one. And so then we were talking about, well, what happens if, Lucy's my good friend. I'm really impressed by her. Normally she's quite a, lazy person. She wakes up at 9 every day, but she's training for a marathon at the moment. And so she's getting up every day at 6:30. I'm so impressed. She's just so motivated. And then that makes sense because she's getting up at the moment every day at 6:30, and at one point she'll go back maybe to being lazy again and sleeping until 8 or 9 or whatever. But it's an example of how present continuous, just because there's an adverbial in there, a frequency adverb or adverbial, doesn't mean that you can't use a temporary, you can't use that in the context of a temporary time period. You can still say, in this temporary time period, I'm doing that frequently. And then afterwards, it'll be a different thing, and I'll do that frequently as well. So, there's that exception. And when you try to think of a way to explain that to a learner, okay, it might initially blow their mind a little bit. That might initially make them think, Jesus, this is, I'm never going to. I've had people in the past when I've told them things like that, yeah, because I always took the hard road. I always took the road of saying, okay, the book says this, but it's not really like that. The book is talking complete crap. The way it really is like this, and think about this example, think about this, The book says that's an exception. I disagree. I think that's actually something that's quite common, etc. So I always went down that road. And yes, the learner might have their head exploded. But then there was another example in that same conversation with my colleague that I thought actually is quite relevant to this whole argument that I'm trying to make. It was the difference between, that I said at the beginning of the podcast, the difference between Fred has been to Brazil and Fred has gone to Brazil. And what's the difference there? So I like, obviously, there semantically, in the context, it's you don't even need context. It's pretty obvious what's being said there. One of them, he's been there on holiday, and the other one, he's gone, he's on a business trip and he's left or something like that. So that makes sense. And we were talking about how would you describe the difference between those two things? And I was saying, well, the first and most fundamental thing you could explain is the difference between state of verbs and action verbs, which is a really classic grammatical difference. Now, you don't have to explain that to the learner. You could just explain contextually when you're using present perfect, to be is like this, or to believe it's like this, and to go is something else. And you could just explain example by example. That's how, that in theory, that's how we learn language anyway. We learn it implicitly. We learn grammar implicitly. We know that if we learn a new language, the brain has a system that learns grammar implicitly. So you don't need to actually explain explicitly what the grammar is. And there's a point that really evokes a lot of emotion and sometimes anger in people. You don't need to learn grammar or teach grammar for someone to progress and to be good in speaking a language. That's for sure. There's no question about it. So you can be angry about it, you can disagree, you're wrong. You don't need grammar. You don't need to explicitly learn grammar to learn a language. But teaching someone grammar when they believe that it's necessary will help them to be more confident. Even if it's a false confidence, it's still confidence. And it will help them to progress faster because they feel more confident. They feel they can express themselves I'm saying things with no mistakes, that's good, or I'm not embarrassed or whatever. So you've given them a tool, a psychological tool, to help them cope with the difficulties associated with language learning that I talked about in episode one, where people are worried about making mistakes or whatever. So can't remember what the point I was trying to make was. I'm always going to come back around to where I was in the beginning. This is how I teach, and this is clearly how I podcast as well. So if you do explain that specific grammar point to that person because you feel that that's really going to help them to get that confidence and to move forward with their training, why not explain stated verbs and action verbs? So the first thing that's going to happen is probably their brain will hurt a little bit. So they're going to go away from that class thinking, oh God, I've just learned some grammar, and Jesus, stative verbs and action verbs, what is all this stuff about? So yeah, that's that, you know, you're going to make them go away a bit probably depressed, and maybe even feeling like they understood less than they did when they came in, because you've opened them up to a whole new aspect of language that they didn't feel they even needed to care about before, and now they do, because you've said it's important. So at that moment, you might feel like you're doing them a disservice. But then I was explaining, well, think about the day that they come to learn something more complex like present perfect versus present perfect progressive. So you're trying to explain to them why. Sometimes you can say, I've been working on this activity, or I've been working on this computer for 20 minutes and my fingers are sore. Or I've worked in this company for 20 years. And they're going to ask, well, how come sometimes you can say it with ing and sometimes you can't? Now, the only way to really easily explain that would be with stative verbs and action verbs. If you've already told them about that once before, you just have to bring it up again. So you've actually given them a tool to come back to a lot of different grammar points and say, oh yeah, but that's because that's a stative verb. And they're going to say, oh, okay, cool, stative verbs again, right, got it. And they'll understand that much more quickly. So, you know, even if they don't need that grammar to progress, you've given them a tool to make them feel more confident faster when they come back to revisit that point again later. So I think giving those explicit rules and those systems, the names of those systems, and actually training learners to be at the very basic level of somebody who knows about grammar, that can actually give them tools they need to get through their training. So it made me think a lot about this point that I brought up earlier, that people don't need grammar to actually progress in language. They could just do it by focusing on spoken skills and writing skills, and you know the actual skills part of the language training and the vocabulary. But they still feel like they need grammar, and it's because, for me, of my experience in France, probably in other countries too, it's because of their education. And we were talking about this today, that I think education, and you know, people talk about this a lot at the moment with this whole education revolution thing. Education is something that can very often go to the heart of somebody's beliefs. That when they're taking language training with you, you can often tell just by looking at the way they do things or listening to how they talk about learning. If you ask them, you know, what sort of activities do you like to do? What way do you like to learn? Do you think this is a good idea? Do you want the grammar rules? You ask them questions and their answers will show you how much they actually care about language training, about education, about their education, right? So I think it was Ken Robinson, I remember, in one of his really famous TED Talk that everybody quotes, does say one thing at one point when you talk about education in general, people always have an opinion. When you talk about their education, one person's education specifically, they pin you to the wall, because it's something that runs very deep with people. And I really like that quote. I think that's really, really true for some people. I know that for me and for this colleague that I was with today, it's not true. I couldn't give a crap about my education. If you tell me, if I'm learning a language with you, and you tell me, okay, so the way that you're writing that vocabulary down is wrong, and it's actually better to do it this way, that'll be much more easy to remember and to recall and whatever, I'll say fine. Because I was really reasonably good in secondary school, and in university I kind of stopped caring about formal learning. I was demotivated by the subject. And so the techniques that I learned then, or maybe it's just part of my personality, I never kept those techniques close to heart. I never thought, oh, I've been taught exactly the right technique to do this, and so I'm an expert in that now, and I'm going to keep doing it that way. If you tell me there's a better way, I'll do it. I think that's more personality-wise. I'm very open to changing my way of doing things if you show me a better way, I'll do it, because I'm always looking for a better way to do things. I don't need that comfort of feeling like I know how to do something really well, and so I don't need to learn it. I've learned it, and now I don't need to learn it anymore. I don't need to think about it anymore. I just have that system, and I can feel confident in that. I don't feel like that at all. I feel like I'm excited by new ways of doing things. I'm always excited when somebody shows me something new and I can improve something that I do in my everyday life. You know, that for me is something that's always exciting. I'm really not precious about that. However, there are a lot of people, and certainly here in France, that's the context we're in. Here in France, education is very highly respected. It's very prestigious. You have different levels of education. So you can go to a regular school and a regular university. You can go to a good school, a preparatory school, and then the good university, or like, you know, a proper serious business university or something like that. There's a kind of elitism in France that exists through the school system, for sure. It's very deeply in the culture here. So when you get some people coming, when I got some people, as an example, coming to me in Paris to get business training, people who had been to these big, through these big systems, through these preparatory schools and stuff like that, if I were to challenge their way of learning, if I were to say, no, don't write it down like that because it's too explicit, you don't need that, you don't need to learn this grammar point like that, just, you know, trust. Or if they're asking me questions like, okay, I need to understand the rules for that, and I say, no, you don't. They could get really, really hostile, really properly, well, excuse me, but that's not how I was taught. And, you know, for me, I got taken aback, because for me, I was like, I don't have that feeling, I don't really understand that feeling, I don't know where you're coming from. And it was only through learning the way it is here in France, through developing myself, my own understanding of my clients, which is a point I make, by the way, in the article on LinkedIn, about that expert language trainers are always trying to learn. So no matter where you are, where you're training, you should be always learning about the people you're training. Always, always, always trying to, you'll never know enough about the people you're training. So I don't know everything about the French people that I train. I don't, but I know a lot. And what I know is some of them can be super defensive and super hostile about how they believe learning should be done. So I'm telling them my sort of cool communicative method. Don't worry, you know, we're going to chat. The objectives are going to be flexible and whatever. Some of them are like, no, that's not how I learn. I know that that's not a good way to learn. This is how I was taught it. Don't you dare tell me otherwise. So that's something you need to take into consideration when you're, you know, should you, okay, I'm a really standoffish teacher. And so I'll often get into a big argument with people like that and really break down their ideas. And, you know, sometimes it can get to the point where you realize you're pushing them too far and you're getting them to be really upset. And you have to really just like stop yourself at a certain point, but like, well, okay, I know I'm right. And I know that this will theoretically benefit them, but at the moment it's not. At the moment it's just really upsetting them. I'm actually just wasting their time. So it's up to you as an expert language trainer to judge, where should I go with this person? Okay, for example, are they alone or are they in a group? Okay, if they're alone and you're doing individual lessons, then maybe it's okay to kind of adapt to their method, give them what they think they want. So give them the grammar explanations, but just keep in mind your own style, your own approach, and make sure that that approach is still coming through. You're giving them the things that they're asking for only as a courtesy to them, and only because you know that it'll help them gain confidence to do what you really want to do and what you know will really have an impact, which is the role play, that, you know, the spoken practice or the video listening or whatever you're going to do. That's the main content part of your lesson. So, you know, spend as little time as possible giving them what they want and then move into the part that you know is really going to be successful in your lesson. So, you know, that's in an individual scenario. You can pander, I think that's the word, yeah. You can pander to learners, because in the end, is it not better that they feel the confidence, even if it's false confidence, so that they can advance a bit faster? They feel safe and secure. That's your job in the end, is to make them feel safe and secure. They feel safe and secure in the language lesson with you, they're going to be much more open to practice. And every time they open themselves to practice, that's going to help them to memorize stuff. It's going to help them to subconsciously acquire new vocabulary, new expressions, new systems. So just keep that in mind, and keep, you know, you keep your objectives very clear in your head, but also, you know, let them know that they're, you know, I had somebody the other day who I did a level test with. And they were saying, yeah, you know, it's just nobody ever corrects me. I go on holiday and I go to the hotel and nobody ever corrects me. And I go to the restaurant and I order the food and nobody ever corrects me when I'm on holiday. And I'm like, yeah, but that's normal. That, you know, when are you going to be like, Oh, thank you for your drink order, sir. But can I just give you a little grammar advice on, like, we're not all teachers. But the point was that with him, he was so concerned by that. That was, this is an initial level test, so he could still pull out of the training if he wanted to. So am I going to tell him, hey, by the way, you don't need that much correction. It'll implicitly come through talking with the native or bilingual trainer. And just getting that good statistics, getting that good statistics going. So you're talking mostly with somebody who doesn't make mistakes. Therefore, the brain will start to readapt, will start to say, ah, okay, this thing that I always thought was like this is not like this. And the more that it hears that, the more it'll start to phase out the wrong way of doing it and to phase in the right way of doing it. So that, okay, that's how it works. That's fine. We know that. Especially from, if you look at bilingual kids, I always had that example because I have bilingual kids, trilingual kids. I remember taking care of somebody's kids in France before when I was just starting out here and saying, hey, I'm really sorry, I was babysitting your kid tonight. And I kept saying, Louvre voiture, but it's actually la voiture. Oh, I'm really sorry, your kid's going to be saying, yeah, did I teach him some mistakes? And then they're like, nah, it doesn't matter. And it's true, it doesn't matter. You look at that situation, the kid has 1,000 examples of people saying la voiture and only has one or two examples of some random nutcase who took care of him one night saying le voiture. So he's not going to suddenly start saying the wrong thing. And I think that's something to keep in mind. It's the statistics that the brain builds up that shows the brain what's right or not. When you choose masculine or feminine in a language, it's because you've heard it that way so many times that you just automatically, just instinctively, just comes out like that. So that, that's this guy talking about, I want to be corrected, I want to be corrected. I know that that's kind of a waste of time. We should really be focusing on speaking practice and not on, board work and feedback. But I'm putting it in his program and I'm going to tell the teacher to do it with him. Because if he doesn't get it, he'll get frustrated. If he gets frustrated, he gets upset. If he gets upset, his brain shuts down the learning. He gets defensive, he gets hostile. He doesn't want to come back. It can have a lot of negative impact. That the net value of that decision is positive if I say, okay, give him some error correction. The net value of it was going to be better for us. If we go with the truth, in inverted commas, the truth that he doesn't need error correction and fight him on it, the net value is going to be less. Even though we'll be doing the right method, the net value is going to be less. So that's important to keep in mind as well. So pander to the learner. Now, I said that that's if they're an individual. If they're in a group, you have to look at the profile of everybody in that group. And that's always the challenge. You might have one person who's that super confident, I don't care about my mistakes person, mixed in with the I went to the big school, I know that I'm supposed to study and learn the rules and then speak only when I know the rules and have mastered everything kind of person. And that is just like chalk and cheese. How the hell do you get those two people to work together? Can you pander to both of them? I mean, I'm not going to give you any particular advice because it totally depends on the makeup of the group. It totally depends on the configuration of the people who are in the group. But in that example that I just gave, you could be just adjusting role plays and adjusting activities to make sure that the confident, super extrovert person has something to say and has opportunities to say things. Maybe the super bookworm kind of grammar person, grammar learner, could be that their job is, get the talky person to give a presentation and to, pitch a product that you've just given them a picture for, so they're like, oh, cool, and they go and just present away. They don't care. Get the grammary person, the bookworm, to write down their mistakes, for example. Okay, you try to write down some of their mistakes, and then afterwards we'll do a feedback session. So both win. Both one of them gets to talk, one of them gets to feel like they're the superior one because they're writing down the mistakes of the other person. And at the end, everybody does that feedback where you look at, okay, I see those points you wrote down. That's really good. Let's have a look at the grammar. Let's see. What we can get out of that. And so both of them, in theory, will be happy at the end. So that's kind of an easy example where you're just going to have to adapt your way of the roles that people take in activities will have to be adapted somewhat for things like speaking activities or things where, there's a lot of production involved. So that's one possible example. If you have another group where there's four, five, six, 10, 15 people, okay, that's. You're really going to have to come up with your own inventive method. But as an expert language trainer, I mean, that's part of what we do. So I leave that up to you. I hope you've got some sort of good advice out of that podcast. I think in conclusion, giving explicit grammar rules, yes, I'm for it. I think expert language trainers should do that when it's appropriate. if it's not necessary, don't do it unless you feel like there's a need for it. If the learner doesn't specifically want that, then maybe don't give it to them, because you can rest confident that if you're focusing on the vocabulary and the skills practice, then you're still, you're doing your job. If they make it clear that they would like that, or if you see by testing the water, that that would make them more confident to speak, then give them that, and adapt and when you see what way they react to that. But don't go too deep into it. Never let yourself go wild like I used to do sometimes, and just start, going into all sorts of amazing exceptions and examples, and oh, isn't this amazing the way this word is spelt, and that comes from, the original Viking spelling of the word. Don't go too deep into it unless it really is like the theme of your lesson, because you really can just do people more damage than good. And if you're looking at somebody who really cares about the way they learn, and they want to learn grammar, they want to be corrected because they think that's the way you should learn because of their education, then you have to find a way to either pander to that person to help them build confidence and to get through it, to get through the training, to do the speaking practice, or you have to adapt the way that the group is, the group dynamic, to take into consideration people who really feel strongly about the way that they should be educated. Adults as much as kids, they can be really, really passionate about the way that they believe learning should be done, and that might also make them feel safe and confident, and that might be another thing you need to do to really help them feel confident in your training, and to get that speaking practice, that the all-important speaking practice, complete. So I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks for checking out this podcast, and if you want to know more, please follow me on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. All the links are in the description. I really look forward to seeing you in the next episode.